morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone out there in listening to a podcast land. This is the Material Podcast, episode number 454, a palindrome. It's always nice when we have those episodes. I'm your host, Florence Ion, and I'm joined here by my partner in podcasting, Andy Anako. Hi, Andy.
Hello, and hello out there to those listening in podcast land, especially those of you this week who are driving your cars in traffic. Boy, what's the deal with that guy in the truck, huh? Why doesn't he learn to use his signals? Am I right?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Did that come across as condescending? I hope not.
No, it was
because I haven't had to drive a commute in quite a while.
I have, and I can tell you that it was not condescending.
Oh, good, good.
I will also tell you that I constantly envy the transit offerings of the other coast.
Yes.
Just thinking out loud there.
The Northeast Corridor. It's like, yes. Hey, why don't I just jump on a train and be in New York in 3 hours without any bag inspection or anything?
Okay. All right. Okay. We don't need that, Andy. Well, I bring this up too because today I had a hankering to try to go to Los Angeles to do something at the end of this month. And Los Angeles, as you know, is a 6 to 7 hour drive, all told. Mm-hmm. You know, with stops and rest stops and everything. And so I eventually decided I'm not going to do it for a different reason because I have better plans to pursue that weekend. But I'm, you know, I wish it could just be so much more easy.
Yeah.
I wish it could be easy for me to just jump from metro to metro.
Yeah. No.
Like, why can't I? I want to just go spend my California money in the other California city. I'm trying to boost the economy here. I'm trying to boost public transit. I'm trying to create jobs. Why is this not being given to me? We did get, I will tell you, you know, because Californians, we have a pipe dream of a high-speed rail that goes between north and south, right? And we did get this week renders of what the stations might look like in the middle of the armpit of California. You know.
Now, where is the
Fresno
armpit of California?
And the surrounding places. Yes. The literal armpit of California.
Got it. I was going to say, because it is kind of like a bent arm. So it's not as close to the arm motif as yes. Cape Cod is, but.
That's very true. Speaking of Cape Cod, it's so nice that you bring that up. So I'm trying to figure out how to segue into this. So I want to tell Andy a story about something that happened to me while I was in the East Coast visiting my best friend. But the fact that you bring up Cape Cod, it's just for me to tell you that while I was there visiting her, so today my best friend birthed a little boy.
Hey, happy birthday, little boy.
So, yeah, very.
And little boy, you know, you're only a day old, but it's not too late to consider becoming a member to the Relay.fm podcast. If you are enjoying in your first 8 hours of life, this 1 hour of the podcast, well, we'll get to that later.
Andy, he's my godson. I can't go.
Oh, that's
godson.
Wonderful. I am a godfather too, and so, yeah, it's great to have. It depends on whether whether it's just a ceremonial role or whether it really is a hey, you know what? You can come to me. We don't have to share that. We don't have to tell your mother or your father about this. Like, if there's something you want to talk about that you want to sort of beta test what your story is going to be, lay it on me. You can trust me.
Right. So, you know, I was visiting my best friend of 35 years this past weekend, and we were talking about, because this is very fun to do. You don't really get to do this until it becomes a reality, but we were making a list of places that we should go summer vacation with kids, because, you know, we've been trying to figure out how we're going to do vacations as a family, and like, we need them. Okay, I want to say when I say vacations, I'm not talking like backpacking through South America. Okay, that's not the kind of adventure that I have the energy for.
You're talking 3 liter bottle of Zinfandel, that kind of vacation.
Yeah,
which is an actual product on the counter of like the neighborhood like package store where I buy my 2 liters of Diet Coke, and I gaze upon it as I would gaze upon a holy relic because it is. It is an amazing object. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, I was just thinking about all the places in America that I've always wanted to visit. And as unfortunate as Airbnb has become as a company, the idea behind it is nice because it gives millennials like me a chance to go halvesies with other millennials on like a nice house somewhere, you know, picturesque.
Yes.
Where the kids can, you know, have play together and the parents can read and drink coffee and wine all day. I mean, that to right. me is vacation.
Yes.
Wine and coffee all day, please. Yes. Just I get sleepy and then I wake up and then I get sleepy and then I wake up. It's it's perfect. But yeah, so I had a really nice weekend. But I want to tell you, though, Andy, that the day that I was leaving, which was Sunday, I was leaving for the airport in about 8 hours. So I'm like hanging out with my bestie. I'm at the foot of her bed. She had just woken up. She was having a hard time sleeping while I was there because, for those that don't know, toward the end of the pregnancy, most folks get a sort of insomnia that's like, it just, you cannot sleep. You cannot sleep those final weeks. It's impossible. So she was waking up at 4 a.m. every day.
Wow.
It's anyway, that's not important to the story. I just want to talk about my best friend of so long because I'm, you know, I'm so happy. But then I had this moment where I was like, oh, crap. Oh, crap. I'm going to lose her. Google Photos did something awful to her hours before I was about to leave. And it turns out that this is an issue that plagues a lot of iPhone users. So listen up if that is you and you're using Google Photos on the iPhone, okay? Now, Bestie has installed an iPhone 12, okay? I share that, you know, but she does update. So she's on the latest right. version of iOS, right? And so she, the other day, got a notification from Google One. So she's paying for Google One right now. She's paying the 1 terabyte tier so that she can retain access to things she already had uploaded there and also so that she can have enough space to have space for her Gmail, her personal Gmail, right? So she's like, I think it's like $2 a month. She's like, yeah, $2 a month. I'll do it. So she gets the notification that Google One ran out of space. It's at 99%. And she's like, oh my gosh, this is annoying. How do I fix this? And I'm like, oh, why don't you just go into like the last couple of weeks? I bet you that you will see that Google Photos has been updating everything, uploading everything in the back. And lo and behold, she didn't realize that Google Photos had the option turned on to back up everything at highest quality. And so when we went to go look at the breakdown of what was taking up all that space in Google One, we saw that it was like 70 gigs, some ridiculously large number was going toward Google Photos. So the photos that were stored
right.
in that app. So I told her, I said, why don't you try deleting a couple and see what that does? So she deletes a couple of them. And she just is like, oh, does that mean that I deleted it from the camera roll? Let me go check. So then she goes into the iOS camera roll and she sees that they were also deleted from there.
Oh, yeah.
So they were deleted locally as well as from the cloud. Well, she starts freaking out, as I probably would too in her situation.
Sure.
And I have. I may do this professionally, but I cry a lot. You know, because I hate being frustrated. I hate it when something goes wrong. And then I get very angry because I'm like, why was there no QA tester to assume that this would happen to me someday?
can I also say that it's an extra piece of stress for people in our line of work, because someone might ask you, hey, like, what do you use for photo backup? Oh, I use Google Photos. Plus, I use Adobe Lightroom for a lot of stuff. And oh, so you like it? Yeah, I've been using it for like 5-10 years. Never had a problem with it, which means that if 3.5 years later, anything happens and they lose one important photo, either A, they will blame you for it and expect you to have a solution to fix it, or they'll be a perfect peach about it and you will still feel immensely guilty because I did tell you that it was a really good thing. I really, and I swear to God, I swear I have never lost photos on this thing. It wasn't.
This is what happened to me.
Yeah.
This is what happened to me. I felt a tinge of guilt because I had asked her to install this on her phone when I birthed Mona, because that's what we were using to share our photos within a small network of people.
Right.
And that's where we continue to store our photos. We have albums that we share, and we're Android users, so it makes sense for us. We're Google users. It makes sense for us. For her, her only connection with Google is through some of the app services that they offer, the Maps, the Mail. Mm-hmm. And she was using the photos, but then... So I'll tell you, the conclusion is that the Photos app is no longer on her iPhone, which is a real bummer. But
yeah,
I don't know if we're getting it back, to be quite honest with you, because she was very upset. We ended up getting the photos back that she needed and getting them back stored on her phone, the full resolution. But what she had to do is she had to bump up her Google One subscription, so her storage space, because there is no... So let me tell you two things that I learned from this. And this is what I learned from doing a lot of Googling to try and help out my dear, at the time, very pregnant best friend. So I found out, first of all, that there is a history of folks complaining about this who are iPhone users. It turns out a lot of people just do not realize that the high capacity backup is turned on by default. They do not realize that the Google Photos app is a camera roll app on iOS. And so it has those similar permissions. Now, this is all kind of new for me, Andy, right? Because I'm kind of returning back to the world of iOS after some time away. And so that's also kind of why I was digging through this, is like, okay, this is a learning moment for me, so I can, you know, get caught up on something I may have missed out on. And indeed, it was a learning moment for me, because I guess that categorization is what allows Google Photos to... I'm still trying to figure out why Google Photos has access to the local iOS photos.
That's interesting. It's if the problem is that when something like that happens on iOS, there's a lot on my mind, but one of them is always, is Google Photos required to do something silly because of App Store rules, or because of how Apple controls access to the Apple Photos to the iPhone camera roll? Is it possible that they don't have the freedom to do what they can do on Android? Well, A, because they make the same OS, but is there something that is not necessarily their fault? Of course, it could absolutely be their fault. I mean, any time that a photo, a cloud storage, and any app that libraries your photos, should never ever allow you to accidentally remove like both copies, both the local copy and the cloud copy at the same time, without making it really obvious to you, either by giving you warnings or just by the way they set up that feature, that this is what you're about to do. Because yeah. this is the exact same reason why I don't use Apple Music for any of my music library. Like even as handy as it would be for a lot of my devices to, now, as I said before, I've got like 200 gigabytes or whatever of, you know, thousands of albums on my like NAS, on my network file server. And I could have Apple Music say, hey, don't import all of this to my tiny little like iPad storage or my MacBook storage, but you can I want you to just basically create an iTunes library that exists on the NAS so that the database that you're using is on the NAS and reflects files on the NAS, because I've had too many incidents where Apple Music has, or and its predecessor iTunes, have made guesses as to, you know what, and he's a user, he's such an idiot, I bet he wants me to delete all of these redundant files that he could be accessing through Apple Music in the cloud. You know what? I'm just going to go ahead. I'm sure that's what he implied when he said, please import these things. No. And so that's why I have never, ever, ever even let Apple Music know that such a thing exists as my music folder on my network storage. So I trust Apple. I think Apple Photos is okay, but it's just that I don't rely on it because I don't have to rely on it.
Right. Now, you see, it's funny that you say this. So Here's something that Google does do that is liable for, is the fact that they make it very difficult to bulk delete photos from Google Photos.
Sure.
And so Bestie is about to, you know, birth this little boy. The last thing that she is really thinking right now about is doing some digital maintenance.
Right.
And so she basically gave in and was like, well, okay, I guess I'm just going to bump up my monthly allotment and deal with this when I can come back to it. And so this has completely soured her experience with the Google Photos app. It's also souring her experience with Google as a provider, because what is happening here to me is it feels, I don't want to say predatory, but it doesn't feel right to me that this is the only thing that she can do in a quick amount of time. It doesn't feel right. I can understand why maybe there isn't like a delete all button, because like the example you provided about, you know, iTunes, you know, what used to happen back in the day, right? Maybe Google doesn't want to be liable for that kind of thing. But whatever they did just made it so difficult to comprehend to do anything, where you're just like, okay, well, I might as well just pay you for the convenience of not having to think about it right now. And so that's what feels really crummy, because we know that Google's trying to diversify where it makes money and how it makes money. And we know Google One is part of this, especially because today they're the blogs were talking about how Google is looking to add Nest Protect and Fitbit Premium to the Google One subscription. So this is very clearly going to become this like we're getting into services now, everybody.
More than that, they've already added that to the plan in the UK, but not in the US. And it's also, and you're right, it is kind of a thumb in the eye, because some of these services like Fitbit Premium, like, oh, great. So now it'll have the basic health and tracking features and insight features that I don't have to pay for at all with Apple Health on an Apple Watch. Thank you. I feel a lot less slapped in the face now. Or you're still slapping me in the face, but with something that's not, at least you put a glove on first.
The Apple Watch is a different ecosystem. I mean,
yeah, but still, it's like, it feels like basic functionality and
no, I understand. Yeah. No, I agree with you with that, Andy. And that's why like this is getting so frustrating, because I came to this platform not wanting to deal with all that. And thus, I will also say, by the way, that my best friend said something like you, but she said it about Apple. She's like, this is why I use Apple, because I want them to just figure it out for me. Like, I want them to just do this for me. Yeah. Why do I have to do it? You know, she's not me. Like, we are opposite kind of gadget users. Yeah. I'm the one who always brings the stuff over. She's also one that's like, ah, no, I'm going to return that. And it's, you know, it's, I'm glad that I have an offline bestie, because I gotta tell you, if she was perpetually online like me, we would not have a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
It's depravity. Yeah.
And it's tough. Like, this is, especially both of us as journalists, like, God, one of my sanity checks I have to put in to everything I write or plan to talk about before I publish is to think like, okay, but you think this makes sense, Andy, but you've been doing this for a long, long time, and you're actively interested in what the file system is like on this thing. Like, what about someone that like is buying this device, like has this phone, and it's a toaster where toast goes in, you press the thing down. Mm-hmm. when it stops working, you throw it out and you replace it. You don't have to understand how it works. You don't have to debug anything. And if it doesn't work, that's a major, major failure, as opposed to, oh, well, you have to understand the complex layers in the architecture of not only the hardware, but also the kernel and the software stack and the APIs. Like, yeah, it's they just want someone to work.
I don't want to understand any of that, man. Yeah. I just want it to work, man.
Yeah. I mean, I was writing something the other day, because I'm thinking again, you can't get more like tech nerdy than this, but you know, I'm thinking about switching my distro from Mint Linux to maybe Pop Linux.
You did it.
And
take a shot.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things I was thinking about, like one of the fun things about writing is that some, when I have to like explain something to like, and I don't know who I'm talking to, it does help me to like discover parts of a decision that I didn't really understand. I didn't never really articulate it. And one of them is that like Linux has to, for me, Linux has to find a sweet spot between being easy enough to use that I will want to use it. But also I like the fact that when something goes wrong, it's not the Apple solution, which is like, oh, it's not the Apple solution of, oh, well, we refuse to let you know how anything works underneath this hood because we don't want you anywhere inside this engine. Like, yeah, but I'm stranded by the side of the road and there are wolves and the temperature is dropping and I don't think I have enough water to last the night.
Luxury but, car makers do this too, by the way. They wrap the engine up. Yep.
Yeah. Like, I mean, and maybe I'm certainly not an expert on engines, but I can at least like, in the cars that I've had, I can at least pop the hood and say, okay, what is the connection to the battery look like? Oh, really, really corroded. I bet if I take my pocket knife and scrape those terminals, maybe it will start up again. That sort of stuff. And Linux, I like the fact that it kind of encourages you to learn about how things work. You can do anything, but you have to figure out how it works. But sometimes it gets so bad, like, yeah, but I don't want to have to debug a problem where, like, this thing will never go to sleep and I can't get it to connect to Wi-Fi all of a sudden. And it's my fault for not understanding how every component of this operating system works. So I mean, there's a happy medium between the two. I think this is one of the reasons why, like, I switched to Android all those years ago, that I do find, from my point of view, it is like a happy medium between iOS, where everything is so locked down to the point of severe annoyance and not really feeling as though this phone that you spent $1,000 for on belongs to you, and necessarily, and being easy enough to use that I'm not like, okay, now the third time today, I'm going to have to hold down this key sequence and put it into ADB mode and navigate this menu with the up and down volume
buttons. Days.
Yeah. It's just, oh yeah, but I'm sorry your friend was having those issues. I mean, it's also the other thing we have to appreciate is that, like, the fact that we know how well these things work and how often they don't work is that we feel as though we have a small amount of additional control than if this thing is an absolute mystery. Like, if you, again, going back to the car, if your relationship with your car is like the toaster, where I put the key in, I turn it, and either it starts or it doesn't. If it doesn't start, there is no option but to call AAA and hope they arrive in the next 2 or 3 hours or before something terrible happens. At least, like, even if I can't do anything to fix my phone, at least I know that, okay, it's probably one of three things. Two of them aren't serious. The third is a possibility, but it's unlikely. Oh, and also I know that there's an update, there's a monthly update coming up, that so maybe if I do nothing in 2 weeks when I install like the new version of Android, it'll be working fine. So I'm still stuck with a phone that can't cut, copy, or paste, but at least I feel as though I have some understanding of like which hamster inside is running on which wheel that is too squeaky. And if a new update puts some grease on that wheel, then suddenly I'll be able to cut, copy, and paste again.
You know, I actually think that's the perfect metaphor for us to use for today's show, because today's show has a bit of thematic hamster wheelishness to it, especially when we talk about first of all, there's a big update, by the way, to the Google search algorithm this week, which we definitely need to talk about because it might affect our jobs. also, Meta CTO has apparently commented on why Android XR isn't coming to the Meta Quest headsets anytime soon, which makes us wonder, are Android's days in the virtual reality over? And one of the things that made me really sad this week that we are also going to talk about, but that anytime I tried to talk to somebody about my grief about it, they did not know what I was talking about, which is that the Windows subsystem for Android is officially donezo. Again, I brought this up to my coworker. She had no idea.
Yep.
I even wrote about this like years ago when it happened. No idea what I was talking about.
I had the same thing happen to me when I was a little kid and Bobby Orr got traded from the Bruins to the Blackhawks. Like they just refused to understand why I was so upset.
Hmm. See, it's hard. You got to be with people who get you, like Andy. For those of you who are sticking around for the members only episode, we're going to be talking about Mobile World Congress. So stay tuned for that at the very end. And for those of you who are curious about what these member only episodes are, go to relay.fm/material and you can find out how to become a member of our podcast and the Relay FM podcast network. All right, Nadie. It's time for us. Let's go take a little water break. And when we're back, we will talk about some changes to the search algorithm.
Glug, glug.
Everyone, there is no need to panic. The world of journalism may be going down in flames, but Google's announcements to its search engine algorithms, I promise, are not going to be the end of us. Okay, so let's all take a collective breath. And now we're going to, let's talk about what it is that is actually happening here, which is that Google announced this week that it's going to be making changes to its search engine search engine algorithms, as well as some policy changes that will make the way you search the internet hopefully a little less spammy. If you've been wondering, gee, my Google has been looking so spammy lately. I mean, I'm hoping that this is what this will help with, but most of the spam that I get annoyed by are ads. So this week, Google introduced major policy and core level algorithm changes to Google search. It has the intention of reducing spammy content by up to 40%, which is not an insignificant number. Now, this is supposedly one complex update, as some pundits are putting it. And of course, we can expect that Google will be continuing to tweak it as it gets it out there. The update is slowly rolling out now, so don't get scared if you don't see what's going on yet, because you know how Google is. It takes forever for these things to hit. Now, we know that Google usually routinely does this sort of thing to change up the internet, which is frustrating, but it is what happens.
Yeah, the last time I made a change like this was back in November. And even people who follow this all the time, including people inside Google, this is like a really big one. It's big enough that they're basically warning a lot of on the page that is not like the official Google blog, the one where they are giving advice to content creators who want to make sure that their content behaves nicely with the search algorithm. They're basically warning them that, hey, we're giving you a month's advance notice that we are changing how we rank pages. We are changing the signals that the algorithm is taking in to decide how to rank your pages and why a certain page might be spammy, like low interest, low usage, garbage content, and what might be valuable stuff. So if you have been playing a little bit close to the edge of the cliff, you might want to roll your content back a little bit within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
What is the edge of the cliff, you may be asking? Well, thankfully, Google actually listed out specifically the kind of spammy content that it's going after. So here it is. It's pages produced by content farms. So anything that looks like it was produced just to game the engine as it was put out. Low quality content or content that is irrelevant to the search topic. Obituary spam, which has unfortunately made the trending news of a celebrity passing difficult to determine over the last couple of years, but it's because obituaries, they're usually expertly tagged with SEO, pop-up ads, and affiliate links of all sorts, the kind of garbage you expect to encounter on the internet, but this is the kind of garbage that is what is producing much of the spam.
It's particularly sickening because it's not just, hey, we're going to scrape legitimate obituary sites and add all kinds of SEO and like tracking cookies and pop-ups and things like that. It's also, hey, we're going to scrape content and just get names of people who have recently died and then use AI to basically generate fake obituaries that have nothing to do with that person's life or who they are, but is packed with enough SEO to essentially steal the click away from a friend or a family member who is like, oh my God, what happened? And when's the viewing? And I want to console the family. And to find out that, wow, you just tricked me into looking at what is essentially an 8-paragraph ad, I would be spitting nails. It's also generating obituaries of people who are alive. So a lot of people, yeah. This is the demonstration of how this industry, they absolutely don't care. I know it seems like a very Muppety, naive thing to say, but like, this will not be a 20-minute distraction. This will be a 30-second distraction. But aren't you fascinated by your inability to understand psychopathic behavior, where it's like, I don't understand why, like, if that idea occurred to me, I'd be like, oh my God, why did that thought even pop into my head that I can hijack people's Google search for obituaries?
It's not psychopathic. It's psychopathic to you because there is an edge of morality around it for you personally. But a lot of the times, sorry, this is how I have made it out in my own head to sort of accept it. But these are just people who are just plain cold trying to make money any way that they can. I know that's not a great thing to pin it on, but unfortunately
they're not stealing a loaf of bread to feed these starving kids. I mean, they can be condemned for even thinking about this,
let alone trying to make
a business out of it. I mean, again, that's why I preface that by saying, yeah, I know it's naive and Muppety to think, oh my God, why would even someone consider about that? Well, because they can make money off of it. And of course, and there's not really any laws against it. So, you know, they can get until Google algorithm catches up with them. It's a very profitable way to do business. But nonetheless, like this is about to turn into a 20-minute digression, but I won't. But again, that's why, like, I'm always kind of surprised that, like, wow, I can't believe you're this old and you still think something as naive as, wow, that is clearly unethical. Why would somebody do something if they know it's unethical? Like, well, A, because maybe they're that bent in the head, and also maybe they know it's unethical, but they don't care. And that's not right, but that's the way the world is. Stop. Don't you should leave the Hobbit patch at some point.
I know. It's hard. It's hard. And the only reason I brought it up that way is just to bring up the fact that spam on the internet, it's just like the spam that we deal with in our real life. You know what I mean?
And I'm also extra salty about it because that's the reason why I had to take my blog down like a couple of years ago, because I didn't. This is back when I was running everything. Like, I wasn't going through like a WordPress host. I was just basically doing shared hosting, and I had to install WordPress myself. And I had PHP like out of date by one update, and there was a site injection attack that basically added to all of my web pages like 10 years worth of posts. Like, hey, wow, discounts on super jewelry and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, so A, when I do relaunch my site, Google is probably going to think this is a spam site and probably will take me down from research results. And also, the only way to get rid of this is to take the whole thing down and build it up again from scratch, because I can't spend 3 months debugging this database. So anyway, that's why I'm extra salty.
See, starting a website actually is really hard, everyone. It's actually not that easy. Which is why Google is also going to go after the Google algorithm is also going to start consider whether content is user generated or AI generated, of course, because of what's going on the internet right now. And we were talking about policy changes. So Google has actually updated its spam policy to take a, quote, more targeted action, unquote, which just means that they can come in and interfere directly on something if they decide that it just doesn't fit in with what they're surfacing in the search engine.
Yeah. So they can basically hammer you a lot more quickly, which is causing a lot of people like on the search engine blogs and search engine boards to basically most people are kind of honest and they're just trying to say, well, look, obviously we're going to apply SEO because that's how we get attention and that's how we get more views and our ads can become more valuable. However, they're worried that the blog post says that, hey, we're also really, really trying to get better at detecting not just AI content. There's a new term that they're calling scaled abuse that used to be just basically, you know, garbage content produced in bulk. Google a little while ago, maybe I think it was last year, they decided to clarify that the search algorithm doesn't care whether content is generated by a human or by AI. It's the value of the content. It's the bulk of that content. It's whether that content is produced for the purpose of confusing the algorithm or not. It's only abusive if it's done, quote, for the purpose of manipulating search rankings, and this applies whether automation or humans are involved. But they're clearly they realize that they have to more sharply address how easy it is to generate content spam with AI. And so a lot of these people who are legitimate providers are going to say, oh God, but like my kid just came to me crying because their teacher said that the paper that they spent a month writing was generated by AI according to this stupid fraudulent tool that they found on a website somewhere. And now they're getting an F for the term. And how can I do anything about it? How can, you know, what if your AI thinks that like my finely crafted content is just spam AI? So supposedly they're trying to, there are two faces to how they're announcing this. There is a blog post and there is the interviews that they're giving. But again, there's the more detailed and like fine grained responses that they're giving on the content that they create for the people who are in this business. And they're saying that, again, if you are, we are not dummies about this. Like if a site that puts two or three things up a day that are relevant to like what you're saying that the focus of your website is, we are going to be fine with you. If you're putting up 1,000 mm-hmm. posts about gambling on a website that is supposed to be like the front door to a medical services community in the Pacific Northwest, we are probably going to figure out that this is spam generated, mm-hmm. and we're going to bury you so deep in the ground that you'll be able to toast marshmallows between your toes. That's how deep we're going to bury you.
You're going to have to go to the 50,000th O. in the Google. It was really struggling with that one.
I got it.
I mean, all is well and good. I just wonder, Andy, if we should start collectively talking about, like, at what point, you know, I was looking over the notes for this and I was just thinking to myself, God, the internet has gotten really, and I mean this literally, it's gotten really trashy lately.
Sure.
Like, it is, the ads are bad. The syndicated ads are just, it's like pasting the same poster over and over and over again. The way ads are just like crammed on pages, the way things pop up, it just feels so messy. And I wonder at one point with everything that we're trying to do, you know, we live this digital world that is supposed to be kind of this parallel of the real world that we live in. So at what point do we get like a maintenance team? Like, when do we start getting an internet garbage truck that goes around and picks up garbage?
Yeah.
And clean, you know, an internet street sweeper that comes in once a week. Don't park your car on that block. You're going to get a ticket.
What surprises me is that so many of these sites, like, again, not even spammy sites. I'm just talking about like your local news station. That has a website.
Yeah, that's what I mean too.
Which is like, it's still like, if I want to know what's going on locally, it really, because of consolidation of newspapers, it's pretty much down to whatever the local news station, TV news station is. And if mm-hmm. I don't dare open this on my phone, because I will find that on my Pixel 6 Pro, like the big phone, I will have like a little narrow band to scroll through to actually read the article, because there is video on the top, there are ads on the bottom. When I scroll a little bit, there's a pop-up that covers everything, even if it's just, hey, subscribe to our station's newsletter, or hey, you want to be, and it's like, it's not, and I'm, this is not the naive Muppet Hobbit reaction. This is surely, like, if you are in charge of running this site and running this operation, you see how bad this is for the experience of actually viewing content on your site. Of course, you want to monetize. And of course, you don't want to have to create a whole digital ad business like inside your little satellite station. You want to hand that over to another company that can do that for you. But surely you realize that no one's going to want to read your content if it's nothing but garbage. I mean, there's an accessibility feature on Android that I turned on, like discovered and turned on like 6 or 7 months ago, that essentially says it's a floating button on the side of the screen. You tap this button, it will on any app, any content that any screen that has lots and lots of text on it, even if it scrolls way down, and it will just simply like get the content of it and put it into big white text on a black background. No JavaScript, no pictures, no anything. And that's the only way I can actually read the article about the horrible thing that's happening like 30 miles away that I'm very, very invested in knowing about. And like, I mean, as I'm redesigning my own site, like there's so many things that are absolute non-starters because like I want people to enjoy reading my stuff. I don't want them to, I don't want to feel as though I'm luring them into a den where really the purpose is to show you ads, not to like give you putatively interesting and useful content. And so it's like, no, I can't have advertising on my site. No, not of any kind. I don't even want sponsorships on my site. I don't want to have any plugins or tools that introduce any trackers on them because it's just terrible.
It is terrible. But the good news is that we are coming up on a break. So why don't we go get a drink of water, collect ourselves. Then when we come back, I'm going to need you to tell me a little bit about what's going on here with the MetaQuest. Okay.
Those of you who are driving, you know, in about 20 minutes, I'm sure this is all going to clear. You know, they're going to whatever little fender bender, the rubbernecker is going to get right past that. And you're going to have some more of your Dunkin' Frappuccino. You probably, you know, the ice has watered it down a little bit, but hey, it's still Dunkin'. You're still going to enjoy it.
I love watered down coffee. Well, Andy, I got to be honest with you that the world of virtual reality, augmented reality, I kind of glaze my eyes over it lately, at least since the Vision Pro came out. Just because it's so out of my periphery. Like, it's just not something that speaks to me. However, this is pretty interesting news because, you know, Google is working on Android XR. Google is working on its own project. But it's a wonder how it's going to exist in Silicon Valley along what Meta is doing with its own suite of things. So I'm wondering, what did you read in the information this week about this?
Well, the first three paragraphs of a very, very interesting article, and I'll get into details a little bit later. It's a little bit embarrassing, but yeah, it's so to catch you up. Now, it's going to shock you that Google has been a little bit unfocused and aimless and leadershipless about its pursuit of virtual reality, extended reality, enhanced reality, whatever. Last year, their big announcement was that, you know how like you've been hearing that we've been developing a whole bunch of different like XR, VR, augmented reality hardware, including those really funky glasses that we showed off at Google I/O last year. Yeah, forget all about that. We're not doing any hardware whatsoever anymore. We are going to create an operating system version of Android XR, and we are partnering up with, we're going to be working closely with Samsung so it'll work great with hardware that doesn't exist yet. Yeah. So essentially using Samsung as the hardware arm of whatever their ambitions are to bring Android to virtual reality. And meanwhile, Meta has had some real success with their MetaQuest headsets, whereas Apple's plan was, we're gonna build something that costs thousands of dollars that has the highest quality components possible. So it has the highest quality video, the highest quality pass-through video, the real world, lowest lag time, all this sort of stuff, and hopefully people won't care that it costs $4,000. Whereas Meta has said, if people can't afford it, we need to build a base of people who think that virtual reality and augmented reality is a good thing. So we're going to build things that cost well under $1,000, and they aren't as primo as the hardware that you'll find on the Apple Vision. However, you can afford it, and there are lots of games and reality and content viewing experiences on it, and even like screen mirroring and virtual displays, stuff like that. And one of the reasons that if this is one of the real big changes in 2024 was that I was skeptical when Apple announced their Vision Pro, because as often happens, and you probably have the same experience, like, because you've been in this business for so long, it's like, wow, there are a bunch of fundamental problems with virtual reality hardware as Apple has presented it, even if in its preview form. So either A, Apple has figured something out and cracked some long-standing problems, and this is going to be a revolution, or they've done nothing but said, well, maybe if we just design a very conventional thing with the highest quality stuff, it will have that Apple gloss on it. And it turned out to be that second thing. It's an oversimplification to like describe an early piece of hardware like this way, but it really is just 3D virtual content, which is what you can also get on the Meta Quest, watching videos in like a big, like a virtual 60-inch big screen, like right strapped to your face, which is also something that Meta does. And you can have virtual displays, like you can run apps inside fake windows that are fake displays that are like in your field of vision, which is also what the Meta Quest does.
Wow.
And yeah. And so,
sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize. This is why I said I wasn't going to do this. Just keep going, Andy.
And the idea is that there's potential for growth, and the difference in the experience between the Meta Quest 3 and the Vision Pro is substantial. However, it's not as though anybody should be scrambling to spend even $2,000, let alone $4,000, on the experience that the Vision Pro is delivering. So with that in mind, the idea of, wow, well, what if Android XR were running on the Meta Quest? What if you had the Android operating system, which could deliver like all of that, which could deliver all of the Google features, like Google Maps, the Google Play Store apps, of the Google Play Store. One of the big nice things about the Vision Pro is that you can run existing iPad apps, and if you've been developing iPad apps, you can easily modify them to become Vision Pro apps. Wouldn't that be great if you had that kind of app library available for the Meta Quest? And right now you can, like, it runs Android, but it runs the open source Android. So you can sideload Android apps if you have managed to scrounge an APK from somewhere. But it's obviously not convenient, and it's not ideal whatsoever. But wouldn't it be great if I could just simply say, I do want to have a 4K desktop window in my field of vision, and also have like social media or news app in the corners. That would be great. So this article in The Information talks that Google and Meta had late last year about doing such a thing. Now here's the embarrassing thing. This is one of those rare exceptions where I can say that I did not read the actual article itself. This is original reporting. They had a source who was privy and actually inside these discussions. Unfortunately, it would cost me $40 for even the cheapest one month.
I thought you had a sub. Yes.
I don't. I do have friends who have subs, and occasionally they will like send me a PDF of something. Like I do try to pay for stuff if I can. Even if to spend $20 for a month subscription to something, for something that is like this unique, that this is their own developed curated content, I feel as though I can't spend $40. So a lot of my knowledge of this comes from like other sources that were also basically commenting on this article, as well as reactions from Meta that these people actually posted on Twitter/X. So what happened was that they did have discussions about this. However, they didn't go anywhere, and for reasons that are kind of predictable, where both sides seems, I'm summarizing here, obviously, but it seems as though both Google and Facebook, excuse me, Google and Meta, both seem to see each other as just like a value add that, hey, we're Google. We've got the keys to the kingdom here. We've got the Google services. We've got Google Play services. And boy, won't Meta be lucky and be able to like want to concede to all of our demands in order to get that on the Meta Quest. And Meta was like, wow, we've got like the pretty much the only viable virtual reality platform that is actually in widespread use today. Wouldn't it be like, it'd be great to get the Google Play Store, and wouldn't it be like a good boon for Google to have like a partner like us to actually give their Android XR, as yet unreleased, some traction? So neither of them were willing to like give in to like the demands of the other. And it also like should be stated that like Meta has their own app store, and maybe
they
like,
do, yes.
Yeah. And like, maybe like they realized that we want to get 30% from like what developers publish on our platform, and they want, and Google wants 30%, and you can't charge a developer 60% of every dime that they make. And also, like, to be fair, Google and Meta didn't want to give up control of the Quest platform to Google, and whatever like drunken path that Google took on the direction of Android XR.
And, drunken path?
Well, yeah, because you know, it's, how many? Honestly, like I don't. If you heard that, you've heard that that old maxim that if a friend needs money, never lend them money. Just if they need $1,000 to make their rent, give them the $1,000. Don't expect it back.
Yeah,
like they will promise to give to give it back to pay you back at some point. You will say that'd be great, but there's no pressure about it because. So, I mean, if I would not like lend Google $100 conditional on them sticking to any plan, like if they presented me with something that we're developing, the Andy Anatko is the greatest tech voice in the entire world platform, and we'd like to partner with you because, and they've showed me everything they're working on. Wow, this really is a platform designed only to convince the entire world, all couple billion Android Google users, that Andy Anatko is the brightest tech voice of this or any other generation. Am I going to count on them still having this strategy in 6 months or a year from now? No, because it's their track record. So if again, right now Meta is in full control of their app store, they're in full control of the operating system that that runs on their platform. If they say, Android XR would bring a lot of value to the platform, but if now that would also mean that, look, we don't have control over new features, new software features that really get on our platform. We don't get control over what apps get approved, what don't get approved. We don't get control over all this sort of stuff. Why would they want to give that up to Google? Not only just on principle that, hey, look, we could run the table. We are competing head on with Apple at this point, and we're not doing so unsuccessfully. Why would we basically cede control of this to Google when they might just say, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, our big partnership is with Samsung, but hey, we're willing to also allow Meta Quest headsets to also run this operating system under certain limitations and conditions dictated to us by Samsung. Sure. So yeah, it is a shame. So Google hasn't commented on the article. However, Meta's chief technology officer did like go on Twitter to confirm the information's report, at least from his point of view, in a way that like made Google look like the bad guys. I'm quoting it. This is not just the entirety of what he said, but he ended with, quote, "They want us to agree to restrictive terms that require us to give up our freedom to innovate and build better experiences for people and developers. We've seen this play out before, and we think we can do better this time around." So, okay. I mean, that's fine.
Can I ask you something? Do you think that this is indicative of, you know, I'm making up this little drama in my head, right? But we've been covering these companies long enough to know kind of what Silicon Valley is like. Do you think that this is a Google coming to terms they do not have the pool that they once had? Because the fact is that Meta just basically told them, we don't need you, sweetie. Like, sure, we have a platform that works already. We really don't need you. We actually don't need Android. Thank you so much. And I wonder if this is just, this is going to be a big wake up call for Google about where it stands in the industry compared to where it was pre-pandemic, like pre this big sort of crash.
Yeah. I don't really know. See, the, what makes this situation different is that, yeah, if you want to create a smartphone, whether it is a $200 budget phone, an edge case sort of, hey, we're making smartphones for ultra durable, for adventure sports people, and for people in construction, people in the medical community, or you're making a $1,200, $1,300 luxury, like high-end phone, like, what are you going to do? Build an entire operating system from scratch? Build an entire developer community from scratch? Right. You need Google, and you are going to do, you're going to accept whatever terms Google offers to get like the full chocolate filled, nougat wrapped, caramel enhanced version of Android rather than do what Meta did. Yeah. I'm sorry. I had a very, 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 I had rice and vegetables for dinner. So I'm still thinking about you. Good for me. It's a good Wednesday night deal, but I'm looking forward to Friday night when I can kick out the champs. But virtual reality is a totally different thing. Like I said, even Apple hasn't moved the needle at all. They haven't created a VR platform for the VR community. They have created a buying option for Apple people. Really, they've done nothing to move anything forward whatsoever. So why would, so in a world in which Meta is doing just fine on their own, the market is still niche enough that they really can build their own app store. They really can build their own OS, and they can certainly do it with greater agility and greater responsiveness to what their customers want than Google can. And let's also face it, that they are way, 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 way more committed to this idea than Google is right now. Google, really, virtual reality is not officially an other bet. It is an Android product. However, right. If a magic wand, put it this way, Apple was able to simply say, you know what? I know that we spent like $1 billion a year on this car project for 10 years, but suddenly, nah, let's just shove the whole thing. Let's forget it. They can do that because they were never really committed to it to begin with. It was a thing they were investigating if things kind of turned out well. That's what VR is for Google right now. And Meta doesn't want to be in a position where 5 years ago they're like, yeah, you know what? I mean, we thought that VR would be a thing. It's not really a thing. Meta saying, yeah, it is a thing. We're spending billions of dollars on it. We're starting to make profits on it. And our partner that we were counting on to deliver an app store is now backing out. Thank you very much. Yeah, they're in a position where they can compete toe to toe with Apple on this, and they don't need an extra variable in the form of Google. They don't need a partner at all. What is Google going to deliver to them that they can't maybe get through developers on their own? I mean, you can watch YouTube videos. I'm correcting myself. There's no native YouTube video for Vision Pro, although it is on their roadmap, Google says. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, it'd be nice to have Google Maps, an official YouTube client, but all that sort of stuff people can get access to by sideloading and through other hacks or through a web browser. So like, they don't need them.
Would this be a good time for us to segue into stuff that Google is killing? Actually, Google isn't killing this.
Yeah,
it's being killed for Google.
Yeah, that's the question that I had to ask like at the beginning of this. Like, everybody knows about the Google graveyard. We've been joking about it for the past 10 minutes, but like, what if Microsoft digs the grave? Is it technically, does it count as a Google kill? And I know I hand things off to you because this is your
I don't even know. I don't even know how to answer. And like, I don't want to take it even further and start talking about things we shouldn't, because then this will start sounding like a Lifetime Saturday movie. And we're not doing that today. I'm not feeling that today. Instead, I'm going to tell you the fact that Microsoft shocked me this week when it announced that Windows 11 would end support for the Windows subsystem for Android in March of next year. Now, the good news is you have some time to change your ways. For those of you who have no idea what the heck we are talking about, I don't know if you remember, but in the second major service pack, I call it a service pack because remember Microsoft used to, they used to launch those big version updates with an SP1 and an SP2. Anyway, Microsoft announced, they didn't announce, they launched this ability to install Android apps on your Windows desktop. And so what they did is they added a layer specifically to run these Android apps, because natively Windows is not really supposed to be able to do that. And so they had built the subsystem for it. And the Android apps were getting funneled in through the Microsoft App Store. And those apps were coming in, they're being rerouted from the Amazon App Store. So they were not Google Play apps. I can't remember, but I do believe that there was, I can't remember if there was a way to sideload or not. Regardless, Microsoft launched this thing a couple of years ago. It was a pretty big deal when Windows 11 was announced, but then they didn't really release it and make it available until the first major update of the operating system. And it sounded neat. I could access Android apps when there was a Windows app that was missing, you know, for me. Oh, this is great. I want to go on TikTok. Well, I don't want to go on TikTok through the browser. I'd really love to go on TikTok natively on, you know, Windows 11. So that's what this existed for. And the idea was also to give a little bit of extra bump up to those touchable Windows laptops. So the little two-in-ones that they had and the ones with the touch screens to sort of give them like another life, because Windows 11 was supposed to be a very touchy operating system. Although I don't know how they expect to teach us all to start touching our OSs, because the whole point, the whole reason we are here in Windows is because we love to move Windows with a mouse. That's the whole point of Windows. This is what I love about Windows. I love moving Windows over, one over there, like the way I have everything. Anyway, Microsoft is deprecating this thing. It will be donezo March 5th, 2025. There are other ways that you can install Android apps if this is something that you might weep over. I would suggest to you that you download BlueStacks if that's something that you really want to do to play games. And speaking of playing games, did you know that you can actually play some games natively that are in the Play Store through the Chrome browser? So that might be something
nice
that you think about as a person. Also, a third way that I like to use Android apps on Windows is if you have a Samsung device, the Your Phone app on Windows, which was co-developed with Google, and also has iPhone integration, by the way. But the Samsung phones let you emulate an Android, well, not emulate, actually mirror an Android app from your device on your Windows screen. And so if you need to like check into a game, I do this sometimes. Well, I need to like check into a game, but I'm writing something in another window and, you know, I'll fire that up. Or if I need to copy something from the app, I'll fire that up. Anyway, so that's how you're going to have to access Android apps on Windows, which it's not a huge bummer, but it also is kind of a bummer, you know, because.
Yeah, especially something that like Microsoft is way different from Apple in the sense that like Apple is, I love Apple. Yes. Again, I'm in front of a MacBook and an iPad right now. I've made my choice, but I have to realize that a lot of the stuff that like the Apple fandom like praises to the point of being really annoying about it is like, yeah, because they don't have to make the computers and the operating system that like more than 80% of the world absolutely depends on. If they had to make sure that every 80% of all the computers manufactured ran the same operating system correctly, they would find some difficulties that Microsoft addressed 10 years ago. It's always surprising to me when there is a feature that they announce with some fanfare that they actively announce that, yeah, we're deprecating this, as opposed to that still exists. If you want to do it, if you want to use it, you can certainly do that. However, this is not going to be printed on the side of the box with a big, like, bold logo saying, no, with Android. Not that there was ever a box where they ever did it that way, but you know what I'm talking about. So I wonder if usability, that the uptake of this feature was so low that Amazon maybe was, I wonder if Amazon was asking for certain benefits from the Microsoft App Store that Microsoft thought this is absolutely not worth it. Like, if, and not even necessarily Amazon being greedy about things or saying, yeah, look, here's the fraction of a percentage point of our revenue comes from this thing. Here's how much money we spend on App Store approvals to make sure that a submitted app will that's been submitted for when that will work under Windows, the Android subsystem will actually work. Like, we're gonna need like you to uptake some of the expense of this. And then they said, yeah, not worth it on our part. I do believe if it was an entirely in-house thing,
yeah,
if there was a source of APKs that people were actually using, it would fall under the, you know what, it took us years and years and years to decide that. I mean, the number of like old pieces of garbage code that are still in there solely because there is some sort of oil rig somewhere in the world that is controlling a set of critical valves with Windows that requires this API that hasn't really been a thing since the Bush administration.
You're giving me a little anxiety because it's making me think about the fact that this is totally an oil rig somewhere.
Oh no, that is the actual
truth. I know. You're giving me anxiety.
Yeah. I mean, there's an Epson computer that I don't collect computers per se. I just happen to like there's some I have at the MIT flea market. If I can find something cheap that I have an affection for whatever, I will buy it. So, but I'm not a retro computer guy, that kind of thing. I enjoy the history, the story, and the aesthetic of it. But there's like an Epson computer that I've kind of wanted to add to the collection that I kind of missed my window, because now it's for some reason, like, computers that are like it will cost, I don't know, $20, $30, $40, $50 max. These routinely go for $200, $300, $400. And it wasn't until I didn't find out the reason why until I learned that, yeah, there is like industrial control systems that use that computer to like control things like flow valves and like sensors and the soft. And when that system breaks down, the people who are running this thing can either spend tens of thousands of dollars to create a brand new, have a contractor come in and design a new system that is with modern stuff, or they can just go on eBay, spend $300 for a replacement version of this 1982 laptop, and then Bob's your uncle, you're back online.
This has been a week, Andy. Well, the good news is that if you're sticking around for the members only episode, we're going to be talking about some fun gadgets and phones that may never see the light of day.
AKA the concept cars of Mobile World Congress, where you get the demo and you just want to look in the eye and say, you have no intention of doing anything with this working prototype at all. This is just to get some... Okay.
I know. I'm jealous of people
and
who can
three,
just like keep
two,
the grift going.
One. Hi, I'm Andy I, the gadget guy. I'm here at Mobile World Congress looking at some of the latest in technology. Hey, Motorola, you've got something that really caught my eye. Tell us about that. I am so glad that I'm not a gadget guy on TV.
Well, if you want to hear us be our gadget, be gadget fancy, you can go to relay.fm/material to get all of our past show notes for every show we've ever done, as well as some information on how to become a member of the Relay FM network and the Material podcast. Now, Andy and I would like to thank everybody who helps make this podcast possible every week. Most notably, our editor, Jim.
Yes, thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. I just wanted to give you your own shout out. Andy, what are you up to this week? Are you doing radio this week?
I was just on GBH last week, so you can go to WGBHnews.org to listen to that. And other than that, you can go to Anatko on pretty much any place you can do a social media search for Anatko and see what I've been posting, photos, commentary, stuff like that. And hopefully this month I will have a larger announcement about something else where you can find my writing. I still don't want to spill the beans just yet, but a date has been picked to like launch a certain thing.
Okay.
So we'll fingers crossed that the creek don't
you
rise.
You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first.
You don't know what you heard about, but you heard it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you heard and frustratingly coy side reference to something that I'm not ready to actually announce yet. So hold on to that thought for a few weeks.
Thank you, Andy, for putting together our show notes today, regardless of the thing that you're working on behind the scenes.
Thank you very much.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
Brenda. As for me, if you want to find me, I'm Oh That Flow on all the social media platforms. I mean, yes, I am. Like, I still have a profile on Twitter/X, but please stop sending me things there. I'm on Threads and Blue Sky if you really need me. And if you like to see photos, I'm on Instagram. And if you like to see videos, I'm on TikTok. Just come join me at these places. They're good places to be. I mean, they're not good places, because then you get sucked into the whole social media thing and it becomes kind of a sickness. And then you start, you know, you get a little text thumb going on because you're on the phone. Anyway, that's all to say. Everyone, be safe, be happy, be healthy these next 7 days. We will see you in a week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye-bye.
Toodle-bye.